is the Mike McFeely Show on Live Local First, 790 KFGO and KFGO.com.
It does seem like a Monday, Pinto. And that's you're just saying that off the air before we went on the air, that it just seems like a Monday, and it kind of does. I think the kids around the community are starting to listen to the tick-tock of the clock as school. I saw that, Carl Ben Eielson,
yes.
The middle school over here along 13th Avenue, teacher's parking lot full.
So the
teachers are back to work or workshopping or doing something. It's just kind of getting to be, I think I actually saw a tree changing colors too. Like a maple tree starting to turn red. I swear to God, I think the trees are already starting to change color. Is that possible?
Just because he's given up. Summer's over for me. Forget it. I'm not going to try and hide anymore.
He's just given up. It's over. It was a short summer. Was 2 weeks in July, and now I'm just going to get right to October, and he just ended it right there. It does seem like a Monday, but we'll try to get you out of your Monday doldrums, or maybe my Monday doldrums, here on the Mike McFeely Show on the Mighty 790 KFGO. And to start that process, let's welcome in our guest. He is Fargo Police Chief Keith Turnus. He is kind enough about once a month to stop by KFGO during the first hour of this program and just talk about all issues regarding law enforcement and police department and citizenry in the great city of Fargo. So I want to welcome Keith Turnus to the Mike McFeely Show.
Mike, good afternoon.
How are you doing?
Very good.
Good, good, good. Anything happening lately you want to talk about? Anything in the news?
I'm not catching any fish.
Me neither. My boat is bone dry. I need to remedy that somehow. If you want to talk with the chief, if you want to ask a question or make a comment or anything else that you want to get across to the chief of police, give us a call. 237-5948 800-880-5346, or send us an email at kfgo.studio@mwcradio.com. And yes, Chief, I have to start there. I have to start with the story that was all over the front page of the newspaper last week with the pictures of the dead deer heads and the guy, and the fact that you guys, at least in the article, which I think in some ways was inaccurate, but you can correct me if I'm wrong, made you guys not look like the most responsive police department. It's about the deer. Was it a deer carcass that was found by the side of the road, South University? There were some people who wanted to claim the deer as their own. The Fargo Police Department became involved because you had an officer on the scene. One of the people was not happy with the way it came out, and it ended up on the front page of the paper. Can you give your take on what happened there and explain from a police department standpoint what happened?
Well, I can. And I'll start by saying, you know, in many ways, I don't blame the individual for being upset with the way that we handled this. I think that we could have and certainly should have done some things differently in terms of how we resolve the deer thing. But and as an aside, I for better or worse, you know, I thought that the article that appeared in the newspaper was a little short on some of the facts. In fact, I think there was some information there that was misleading. But that aside, because that's really not the issue. The issue starts with how we handled the situation, and there's certainly some things we could have done and should have done better. I've since talked to the individual employees that were involved in that. We've taken a close look at how we would deal with a situation similar to this in the future. I'm confident that we've corrected the deficiencies that were made in this situation, but there's no question we could have done some things different and better.
So what could you have done differently or better? What will you do differently or better in the future?
Well, one thing I would ask people to keep in mind is that even though we have animals, to include deer, that die in the cities, most of the time it's along the river. Sometimes they wander into somebody's yard. We have deer that die throughout the city on a continuous basis. And as a matter of standard practice, the way we deal with that is we, just like we did in this case, contact the street department. They come over, they pick up the animal, they take it out to the landfill. That's how it's disposed of. The suggestion that's been made that somehow we should give the animals away to an organization like the zoo for feeding purposes, that's never happened. In fact, the zoo has never contacted us and said, look, we'd like to make use out of those animals when they come to your attention. So keep in mind that we deal with those on a regular basis, but here's what we don't deal with, and that's where somebody comes along and says, hey, I'd like to take the animal. The highway patrol, sheriff's deputies across the state, they deal with that on a regular basis. People hit them with their car, they die, and the person says they want the animal. That doesn't happen very often in the city. So there's a little... Not as an excuse, but we're a little naive on how to deal with that situation. And it brings me to how I think we should have handled this in this case and how we will handle it in the future. And that is that an individual who wants an animal like that simply can ask law enforcement. And it could be us. It could be the city police department, the sheriff's department, or the highway patrol. They simply have to ask law enforcement for that temporary tag, which allows them to then take the animal, possess it, until they work out the additional arrangements with the Game and Fish Department in terms of having laying claim to the deer. And that's what didn't happen in this case. In hindsight, you know, I wish we would have simply, even though we're unfamiliar with the process, I'm wishing we would have either given the person the temporary tag or contacted either the county sheriff's department or the highway patrol, had them bring a tag to us where we could have temporarily tagged the animal. This person then could have taken it. And that's what will change in the future. We'll certainly familiarize ourselves with that process so that we do have those temporary tags available, and then that's what we would do.
But what, was there more than one person that was trying to lay claim to the animal, though? And is that part of the issue, that if you have, if four people come up to an officer and say, I want a deer, I want this deer, if I'm the police officer, and I don't mean to speak for anybody, but if I'm that person, I'm standing there going, I don't have, you know, I have a million things going on. I need to get here. I have this to take care of. In all honesty and fairness to the officer, I don't even know who it was, it's not at the top of their priority list to make sure that A, B, C, and D are all satisfied out of the situation. They're not a counselor. They're a police officer.
Well, that's true. And that's one thing, of course, that doesn't come out publicly in terms of how this situation unfolded, because, yes, the one individual does make contact with the Game and Fish warden, who was out in Jamestown, I believe, at the time this happened. And then we have at least one other person who comes along and says they were interested in the animal. Now, keep in mind that neither one of these people are the ones that actually hit the deer with their car. They're just two people who happen to come across and see the animal laying there. So it did put the officer in a little bit of a quandary in terms of, well, who, if I had the temporary tag to give to somebody, who would I give it to? I've got two people now that want it. The one person, of course, is going to at least make an issue out of the fact that, well, hey, I was the first person to contact Game and Fish. But in many ways, a lot of that is irrelevant. I think what, again, by way of hindsight, I think what the officer could have done and should have done is to simply say, well, look, you're the first person who came along and asked for it. I'm going to give you the temporary tag. It did create a little bit of an issue out there, because you're right. What does the officer do? I mean, he can't hold a lottery alongside the road in terms of who's going to get the deer. But again, all of those things, and I suppose we can chalk some of those things up to trying to rationalize and make excuses. I think the officer in many ways did the best he could under the circumstances. But again, in my view, and after we've had a chance to discuss this internally, there's certainly some things we could have done differently that would have resulted in a better outcome.
And that's fine. But let me make one more statement about this. We can move on to some other far more important things. The other thing about the whole article and the whole story in and of itself is how much time and how many officer resources need to be taken up over a dead deer. I'm not even a citizen of Fargo. I live on the Minnesota side, so it's not my taxpayer money. It has nothing to do with me personally, but just common sense. I look at this, Chief, and go, how many people need to be involved with this? How much time needs to be taken up over a dead deer, for God's sake?
Well, again, I don't want to spend a lot of time critiquing the article, but I will make this point, because in some ways it's kind of fanned the flames that have taken place over this issue a little bit, and that is this whole quote that was made by the police department about, you know, the use of resources. Well, if you read the article, it makes it suggest that or makes it look like the quote was Lieutenant Vettel trying to determine how natural resources should be used. And that's not what occurred. What occurred was Lieutenant Vettel was trying to make a comment about how many police resources we needed to dedicate or tie up on this particular issue. And, of course, that was completely misconstrued in the article. And it led people to believe something completely different than what
it led. And I've read some of the message boards, and it led, you know, people to think that Officer Vettel was making comments about natural resources, that somehow he had appointed himself as an expert on the distribution of natural resources. It was police resources.
Absolutely.
To which he was referring.
And you know, again, for better or worse, and I'm not beyond acknowledging when we make mistakes within the police department, and this isn't the first and it won't be the last time we make a mistake, I'm not the least bit tentative or hesitant or fearful of somebody pointing that out. In fact, I think that's good. In this case, we've learned something from how to deal with situations like this. But as you well know, and as everybody in your newsroom well knows, you know, the media is really the purveyor of information, and it's going to drive public perspective right mm-hmm. from the get-go. If you read that, if you read that article in the newspaper, if you listen to a news broadcast, and people are going to take that at face value, and if it's inaccurate, it really has the potential to, whether it's the police department or whoever the subject of the story is, really puts them in a position of saying, well, wait a minute, that's not exactly how things how they unfolded, and yet the damage is already done.
Jack Zaleski, unless you have some sort of photo of an officer with the antlers in his garage or something, I thought the cheap shot was uncalled for. You're telling the entire community that the Fargo Police Department is corrupt, basically, and they took away the antlers from this Raleigh guy who laid claim to them. I thought that was a cheap shot beyond anything necessary. I know cheap shots, and that was a cheap shot that was unnecessary, I thought, in my opinion. Fargo Police Chief Keith Turnus with us on the Mike McFeely Show. We could take your phone calls, 237-5948, 800-880-5346, kfgo.studio at mwcradio.com. How many dollars do I owe to the kitty so far, Pinto?
You're doing pretty good so far.
The answer is zero. Answer my question. Zero. Zero. None.
I have facts to back that up. Zero.
There you go. You can't cheap shot me on that. We'll take some phone calls, talk more with the chief next. Baby, I'm going to go right to the phones, 237-5948, 800-880-5346. Is it Jeannie? Jeannie, I'm sorry. Yep. Jeannie, you're on the Mike McFeely Show with Chief Turnus. Go ahead.
Hi, I was wondering, was this the deer that was down at Riverside Cemetery? We saw a great big buck and some several does and two little fawns about 2-3 weeks ago. I'm just wondering if that's the same deer.
Chief is shaking his head, Jeannie. I have no idea. I don't think he does either. Which it was, I know it was a large deer. It was a beautiful animal that got hit by a car on South University and
died. And much further south on University than would be close or in close proximity to the cemetery.
Okay, because we took pictures of the whole family, and it was a great deer with huge antlers, so I wondered if it was, and if it was, it's too bad.
Animals die. They die, as Chief said earlier, they die in plain sight sometimes, and they die down by the river, and there are far more animals dying that we don't know about than the ones that we do know about. We only have a minute left, then we'll let this whole thing go, but let's put it this way. If the lead story in the local newspaper is about the Fargo Police Department and the way it handled a dead deer case, that's a positive thing for the Fargo Police Department in a way, right? Because you may not like the publicity it brought you, but it also means that people aren't shooting each other in downtown Fargo on a regular basis, right?
Well, I will tell you, Mike, I think if you talk to a lot of people that I know both professionally and personally, they'd tell you that I'm more of a pessimist than an optimist. But the optimist in me says that when that is the story in our local newspaper, I'm sleeping pretty well at night because I'd much rather be dealing, and I think our community would much rather be dealing with things like this than those violent crime issues that seem to plague other communities.
Have you gotten any calls from any of your colleagues in Pittsburgh or Detroit or Minneapolis saying, really? Really? That's the story. That's your biggest problem in Fargo is that.
No, but I'm waiting for Letterman to call me, quite frankly.
Okay. Fargo Police Chief Keith Turnus, our guest for another half hour or so on this program. You can call and get into him after the bottom of the hour, 237-5948, 800-880-5346, kfgo.studio at mwcradio.com is our email. And the Mike McFeely Show on this Monday afternoon. Fargo Police Chief Keith Turnus giving us his monthly hour to stop by and chat about some police-type issues in Fargo and in the region, and I always like to have him do that. You can call us, 237-5948, 800-880-5346, or send us an email at kfgo.studio at mwcradio.com. You got something to say?
They can text in, too.
Oh, yeah, you can text, that's right, yeah, to the Mike McFeely VIP text club.
There you go.
Yes, and I'll get how you can join that soon. I don't want to take up the Chief's time by doing that, so we'll do that maybe at 3 o'clock. Email comes in for you, Chief. It says, I've noticed over the last few years, the Fargo patrol cars, both marked and unmarked, have been sitting by the side of the road at night without any lights on, monitoring traffic with their radar and causing a potential road hazard. Then he goes on to say in Minnesota that the Highway Patrol does it, but they at least leave their parking lights on. What's the North Dakota law regarding police cars sitting by the side of the road with no lights on?
Well, there really isn't one. I will say that as long as the police vehicle is legally parked, whether it's alongside the road or, you know, wherever, downtown, outside of downtown, as long as they're legally parked, there's no requirement to leave their parking lights or their headlights on. Most of the time when that's taking place, of course, the officer's there trying to focus in on a particular traffic violation. So I'm not surprised that they don't have their lights on. But as long as they're not parked in the roadway where they're creating a hazard, as long as they're legally parked, there's nothing that would prohibit that.
Something else I wanted to hit on you with was there's been a lot of stories in the news lately about break-ins, car break-ins, people, whatever, busting into cars one way or another, taking stuff, et cetera, et cetera. It seems like there's a stretch of them recently have been in the news. The question I would have for you is, are you solving these? Is Fargo Police, we hear about the front end, we're not necessarily always hearing about the back end of it. And are you catching the people? Are you returning the property? What's the status of these break-ins?
Well, I'm glad you bring that up, Mike, because here's one thing that I think gets overlooked or maybe not reported, and that is from time to time, and it happens throughout the Fargo, Moorhead, West Fargo area, we'll experience a rash of car break-ins or garage break-ins or those types of things. And when there's, six or eight or 10 that happen in a particular neighborhood, of course, they capture the media's attention and then eventually mm-hmm. the public's attention, as it should. But then, we don't solve those cases overnight. Sometimes it takes us maybe a month, maybe 3 months, maybe 6 months. But quite often we are able to solve those cases. But I think in many respects, the public never hears about that. I'll give you an example. Earlier this year, we had a rash of car break-ins that happened, early on in the spring, early summer. And by way of some diligent investigative work, just in the month of July, we were able to clear 20 cases of where individual vehicles had been broken into or somebody's garage had been broken into. And yet that didn't garner any publicity as opposed to when they were reported on the front end. Now, one of the things of note relative to these recent resolves to these recent cases is that in one instance, what was taken out of somebody's car was an automatic rifle. Now, again, you might say no big deal, but if that ends up in the wrong hands, which it already did because it was stolen out of somebody's car, if that ends up in the wrong hands and then in the furtherance of another crime, that's a serious concern to me is to be able to identify and track down that stolen rifle before it's involved in a more serious crime. And we were able to do that by way of solving those 20 cases just in the month of July. So to come back to your question, do those cases get solved? Yeah, with some regularity, they do. I'm very happy with our clearance rate. We are way above both a regional and a national average in terms of how often we're able to solve those cases. But I don't think the general public in many ways hears about that. They hear about it on the front end, as you said. But when those cases are resolved, they don't garner the same publicity.
Well, and that's the media's fault, whether it's radio, whether it's TV, whether it's newspapers. It's our job, whether it's a talk show host or a news reporter, to follow up on some of that stuff. But part of it is, of course, the splashiness of the fact that a break-in. Oh, it's a break-in. There's been a rash of break-ins. And the headline could say it's a rash of break-ins in Fargo. It's not quite as glamorous when you solve one at a time or one here, one there. Okay, so you return somebody's purse. Where's the headline?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know the way
and we understand that. We really do. In fact, to be quite frank with you, I'm really not all that interested in the publicity on either end. But I understand that, when we have 15 cars that are broken into in a particular neighborhood, how that is going to capture the community's interest. But I want to make sure that the general public here in Fargo, in fact, let me go so far as to say Fargo, Moorhead, West Fargo, the two sheriff's departments. I think law enforcement in this immediate area does a phenomenal job of not just resolving crime, but in many ways preventing crime from happening in the first place. But the resolve of that crime, I want to make sure people understand that those cases, when you hear about those 15 cars that get broken into or those five garages that have been broken into, those things aren't just out there lingering, that they never get solved. They do get solved, but I don't think that, they obviously don't garner as much attention when they are resolved.
When it comes to break-ins, the old cliche is many crimes are crimes of opportunity. Are car break-ins the same way where, and I'll pat myself on the back here. I'm fairly diligent when I leave something in my pickup truck that I don't leave it laying out in the front seat. If I have whatever, my phone or something else, my wallet, I tuck it away somewhere so somebody can't see it. Are these crimes of opportunity for somebody walking by?
No question. We have, at least in Fargo, we have been beating repeatedly the drum of prevention. In fact, I was last week during National Night Out, I was at one of the neighborhood block parties, and we were talking about this very issue. And what I tried to get people in that neighborhood to understand is that a lot of these crimes are just that. They're crimes of opportunity. They're people who, for whatever reason, are out and about at 2:30, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the morning, and they stumble across somebody's car that's unlocked, that, you know, has a computer or a cell phone or a wallet or whatever just laying there on the seat. And so they open the door and they take it. Or they simply happen to walk past somebody's home where the garage door is left standing open at night, and there's, you know, kids' bicycles, somebody's golf clubs, whatever, and the people that just reach in and take it because it's so easy to do. If people lock their cars, they don't leave valuables inside, they make sure their garage doors are closed, their sheds are locked, those would-be thieves that come along, when they see that it's closed and locked, they move on until they find the one that's unlocked or left open. So there's no question. In fact, I've said this for years. If we as a community could really embrace some of those simple preventative things, the property crimes that happen here in Fargo, we'd cut that in half almost immediately.
When these break-ins happen or the thefts out of garages happen, are they just by accident? Or some guy, like you said, at 2:30 in the morning, likely drinking somewhere, walking through a neighborhood, says, oh, boy, there's a nice bike, walks up and takes it. Or are there criminals who are saying, okay, I'm going to walk through neighborhood A tonight at 2 o'clock in the morning and see what I can get? Is it organized, so to speak, or is it just random?
It's both. It really is. There's no question. There's a criminal element in our community that, you know, they predetermine that they're going to go and work a neighborhood looking for things to steal. But a majority of the property crimes that come to our attention really are those crimes of opportunity that in many ways could have simply been prevented had the owner of the property just taken those simple precautions of making sure that their doors were locked and their property wasn't as accessible.
When you went out to the National Night Out and you meet with folks face-to-face, shake their hand, get to see them, what are they telling you? Are they bending your ear about, you need to do this, here's what we need to improve on in Fargo? What are you hearing from the people?
Well, you know, I'll tell you, I enjoy going out there and visiting with people under settings like that, because more often than not, the people that I'm visiting with are that silent majority of people who we might not regularly hear from or ordinarily hear from, and they're very, very happy and pleased with what the police department is doing here in the community. So it's always refreshing to hear from those otherwise silent majority of people throughout the community that are very happy with what we're doing. But from time to time, and less so on an event like National Night Out, almost always by way of telephone or email, I'll get somebody who's unhappy. And then, of course, we try to address that. But I think, generally speaking, people throughout the community are very happy, very content with the policing services that they're getting.
237-5948, 800-880-5346, kfgo.studio@mwcradio.com. Fargo Police Chief Keith Turnus, our guest in studio for the next 15 minutes or so. When we return, we'll talk about people going through red lights. I heard somebody complaining to you about that earlier today, Chief. I won't say who it was, Jim Monk, but we'll talk about that on the air. And also, are you recruiting guys? Is that somebody else popped their head and said, are you looking for recruits?
We are.
Fargo Police is looking for recruits. We'll talk with the chief about that next, right here on KFGO. Segment left with Fargo Police Chief Keith Turnus here in the Mighty 790 KFGO. We talk about the important stuff off the air. Fishing, catching fish, catching walleyes, working to catch perch on Devil's Lake, things like that. We need to get away from the serious stuff and talk about... Actually, that is the serious stuff.
I'm telling you, I'm more than happy to do this show from your boat on Devil's Lake.
So am I. So if you talk to the guy upstairs, tell him to get the equipment for me, you and I can make that happen.
So I'll see what I can do.
And this is kind of a fun question for you, Chief, because somebody in our newsroom, Jim Monk, was asking about it, saying that he's seen a lot of people running red lights, that not by accident so much anymore, but people come up to a red light, look both ways, make sure there's nobody coming, and then just go through the light. Is that a complaint that you've heard of? Is it a rash of that happening in Fargo, or is that just Jim Monk being Jim Monk?
Well, knowing Jim as I do, I'm sure he's dead serious about that. But, you know, traffic issues still. It's a huge problem in our city. And again, the optimist in me says, well, I'd much rather be dealing with traffic issues than violent crime issues. So, but traffic throughout the city still continues to be a huge problem. We write, you know, thousands and thousands of tickets every year. Many of them are for red light running. I'd like for us to be able to commit more resources towards dealing with traffic enforcement. Of course, we have officers on motorcycles during the summer months that are out there writing tickets. I really think, and it comes back to a discussion I think you and I have had probably 10 times, mm-hmm. and it still comes back to doing something with traffic that works hand in hand with enforcement, and that's got to be consequences. All right, right now, there just aren't any.
What is it if you run a red light and get caught?
$20.
So that would explain it then.
You and your wife could go to a movie for $20, but run a red light and potentially crash into somebody, $20.
And that's it goes back to the, you're consistent with your thoughts on deterring crime or traffic crime. Corey in Fargo, you're on with Chief Turnus. Go ahead, Corey.
Hey, just had a quick question for the chief here, and if he had any opinion on what the Attorney General of the U.S. did today with his opinion on what drug policy and sentencing should be done concerning our prison population and how he thinks that should be, how that would affect Fargo, I guess.
Okay. Corey, good question. Thank you.
Well, I'll tell you, I agree in part with the Attorney General's position on this because I do think that when we're talking about, you know, first-time offenders, small-time drug dealers, that type of thing, you know, incarcerating those people for really any period of time, I think is really a waste of resources. But let's not overlook the fact that a lot of violent crime is attached to, you know, large-scale drug operations. And we've seen that here in Fargo. So where I would agree with the Attorney General is if we're talking about, you know, the person who is again, a first-time offender, is not shoulder deep in drug trafficking, incarceration, you know, I would replace that with some other type of alternative to deal with that issue. But those larger scale drug operations, and they can involve a nexus that circumvents the country and then even into Mexico and other parts of the globe. Let's not overlook the fact that a lot of violent crime gets traced right back to those type of organizations.
And what Holder said today was that he wants to see we as a nation, as you said, not put first-time or all drug offenders in jail, correct? It all goes back to the war on drugs, mm-hmm. right? Back in the 1980s, it was get tough on drugs, throw everybody in jail for every offense that we can. Holder today pulled back from that and said, look, we're filling up our prisons with guys, as you said, first-time drug offender, whatever, marijuana, cocaine, not dealers, not people with history. Holder today said, let's pull back. We'll get them rehab or put them in some sort of community outreach type of deal and then put the hardcore criminals
in jail. I really don't think that what he was getting at were those drug offenses that more often than not end up in federal court where the penalties are substantial. I mean, those are cases where, those are substantial offenses. But if we're, if we're filling up local and county jails with, again, those small-time, first-time offenders, I think there's some better ways to address that issue.
What's the drug situation in Fargo, Moorhead, West Fargo, Dilworth right now? What's the drug of choice that you're seeing out there, and do things change over the years?
Oh, yes. In fact, you'll remember from several years ago, there was a huge emphasis on methamphetamine. You know, that by way of some very aggressive enforcement, some things that the state attorney general did in terms of putting some of the materials that is used to make methamphetamine behind the counter. You know, you used to be able to just walk in and buy as much cold medicine as you wanted to. Now you have to. I mean, a lot of that stuff is behind the counter. So we took the edge off of meth and I think were very successful in combating that. So now the pendulum swings back to where we're seeing more marijuana. In large quantities of marijuana that are finding their way into the community. But even that now is starting to slip. We're not prepared to push any panic buttons yet, but we're seeing heroin make a little bit of a comeback. You know, the drug crimes that happen here in our community, again, those don't get a lot of attention on the front end because they really involve some in-depth investigation. Don't be fooled by the fact that, well, you never hear about it, you never see about it. There is a fair amount of drug activity that's taking place here in the Fargo-Moorhead area.
Minnesota's looking at legalizing medical marijuana, possibly, or attempting it in the next legislative session. Police Chief Turnus's thoughts on that?
You know, in principle, I really don't have any heartburn whatsoever with this idea that marijuana should be made available for medicinal purposes. I mean, we do that with any number of other controlled substances, but therein lies what I think has to happen, and that is it needs to be regulated. It should be regulated just like any other controlled substance. In other words, you got to go to a pharmacy to get it. A doctor's got to prescribe it. This idea that we just allow individuals to open up a shop in downtown Fargo where as long as they just sell small amounts that anybody and everybody who happens to have a card can walk in and get it, I think that opens up way too many doors that allow for abuse and that type of thing. Not that there aren't abuses that take place with prescription meds, but you know, as long as it's prescribed by a physician and you have to go to a pharmacist to get it, I really don't have any heartburn with it.
And very quickly, do you believe then, and this is your opinion, that it is I had former Sheriff Bill Engelbretson on from Alexandria. He's now a state legislator. He said that he believes that these kiosks and these street corner dispensers of marijuana is just a way to have people have more marijuana. He doesn't believe that it's all for somebody with a bad back or a sore eye or anything else or whatever.
I think, you can, in many ways, put this in the exact same boat as you see with some of the other medications that are abused. You have people that go and get all kinds of things. Sometimes it's by way of forging prescriptions. Sometimes it's by way of stealing the prescribed medication from somebody else. That might be a topic for another show. I mean, there's a huge amount of prescription drug abuse that takes place. I think marijuana could certainly follow that same path. But this idea that we allow people to just set up that kiosk and sell it at will to anybody, you know, who shows up with a card, I think that opens up way too many doors for problems.
30 seconds. You're looking for recruits for the Fargo Police Department. How can somebody become a cop in Fargo?
Well, we're always looking for good qualified candidates. We're a large enough organization now where we always seem to have at least one or two openings. If you're interested in becoming a police officer, you can go to our website, you can go to our Facebook page, you can get a lot of information. But we're looking for good quality individuals to fill the positions we have.
All right, Chief Turnus, thank you.
Thanks, Mike.
As always, once a month he drops by, gives us an hour of his time to talk about cop stuff and police stuff here in Fargo. We always appreciate that.